Well, joining us, very pleased to say, actor, singer, X-Man, there's a number, raconteur, writer, what else could we call it? It's Alan Cumming. Good morning, Alan.
Hello. I love X-Man, like I've had a sex scene.
Wait, I have to ask you about
still
that.
Man.
Still a man. Let's chat first of all about you're going to be in Yorkshire very, very soon. You're going to be doing a couple of things. You've got a book signing at Waterstones. And then also you've got your show, Alan Cumming Sings Sappy Songs at the Barbican
yes.
Centre in York.
Yes, indeed.
This is
forward, double whammy.
just tell us a little bit about the show, if you can, because this is not your first show, is it?
It's my first time at the rodeo. No, this is a sort of a cabaret show. It's like me and a few musicians, and I sing songs and I tell stories. So it's actually a really old-fashioned kind of evening. You know, it's like a proper old-fashioned cabaret. I tell you things about my life. I sing songs that kind of, you know, are pretty emotional and intense, and I tell funny anecdotes. And it's sort of like a smorgasbord, if you will, of my life and different musical genres. So that's what this show is. And I did one before, about 5 or 6 years ago, called I Bought a Blue Car Today, that was my first foray into, you know, doing concerts. So I really like it. I like the way you connect with an audience as yourself. You know, you don't have the veil of a character between you, and I really enjoy it. I love. You know, going to different places and connecting with different people, and you know, I think it's another string to my bow, and a string I'm plucking away on quite a lot at this moment.
I would imagine it when you first do something like that. Is it quite nerve wracking because you, as you said there, you haven't got the veil of a character. You're doing it.
Yeah.
It's you. It's you haven't got that something to hide behind.
It's totally terrifying. I think that's why I left it until you know my late 40s to actually attempt it because. It is really scary. Like, you know, you're just... I mean, I used to hate standing up and making a speech or, you know... I mean, I think everyone imagines if you're an actor, you like nothing more than just stand on a chair and sing a song somewhere. And I would rather stick pins in my eyes than do that. And I've actually got more confidence about doing things, you know, because I feel more confident about my abilities to do things on the hoof now. And it was just, I always wanted to do it. I always thought it would be a great way to connect to people. And I thought the idea of, you know, if you're an artist in any way and writer or actor or whatever, your thing is you want to get to people and connect with them and tell them things about your life and your experience. And so this is really the ultimate way to do it. And also my book at the same, you know, the book that I'm hawking as well at the same time, it's kind of in the same vein. It's stories of my life and photographs that I've taken. So I'm on this kind of, you know, quest for authenticity, I think, right now, and I'm enjoying it.
I was going to ask you about the book because it's not your first book. This one's called "You Got to Get Bigger Dreams," they're sending me a copy so I can have a read of this, and I'm very much looking forward to it because I do like showbiz anecdotes, and I think there's going to be a few of them in here because you've led quite a life, Alan.
And I've still got some way to go, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
There are showbiz anecdotes, but they're all kind of with a twist. It's not just your, you know, it's not a kind of kiss and tell or a gossipy book at all. I think, you know, I have this kind of pretty amazing life. It's a life that I never thought I would have had from when I was growing up in Scotland or even being, you know, at drama school. It's just things have all gone out of control. And yet it is now my life. But I think I've got a healthy outsider's view on it. So these stories are all stories of things that have happened to me, but with my kind of outsider's eye on them. And then there's photographs that I've taken along the way that kind of inspire some of the stories too. So there's some juicy things, but they're always a bit kind of weird as well.
I'm looking forward to having a read. I really, really am. I wanted to ask you about, because your career is, you span so many things with sort of acting and singing and theatre, film, TV. I remember, I think the first time I ever saw you, I was watching a soap with my mum. My mum used to be addicted to Take the High Road.
Take the High Road.
And I think, was that your TV debut, that Take the High Road?
No. No, it wasn't. It was early days, but my actual TV debut was for Granada in Manchester, I did an episode, when I was still at drama school, I did an episode of this thing called Travelling Man that Lee Lawson did, where he was this man who was going along the canals. That was my very first television thing. I was terrible. I had no idea what I was doing. After drama school, I did like a Taggart, and then another TV series, of course, television, and then I went in to Take the High Road for a while. So that, and it was actually a really good. Anyway, I talked to quite a lot of actors I know now, like you, are big Hollywood people who early on worked on soaps, and I think it gives you a really great grounding, because you know you have to work really fast. You have to kind of be used to dealing with material that's maybe not such high quality, and you have to try and keep the story going at all times. So I think it's actually, I really enjoyed it. It was an absolute hoot. And I was also the first person ever to be murdered in Take the High Road.
Were you really?
Yes, I was burned alive in Mr. Blair's peat shed. And then what was hilarious was that they didn't, when my body, my charred body was taken away, it wasn't even me. They just got an old corpse from Taggart and used that instead.
Is that to save on a fee? Or?
It would save me on the next episode fee. Yeah, they didn't have to pay me because it was just an old dummy from Taggart, from the prop department of Taggart.
My 4-year-old daughter, Isabel, I recently showed her Spy Kids.
I love that film.
She absolutely, I mean, she's 4 years old. She's infatuated with dark characters at the moment. So, like, Darth Vader's her favourite. As soon as Fegan Floop came on, is this the nasty man? And I thought, I think so, a little bit. Although he turns out right in the end.
Misunderstood. She's not really
misunderstood. Okay, so that was it. The next week or so, everything was Floop. I'm blaming you for that one.
I loved it. That's really 2000 I made that film.
Good Lord.
Yeah, 2000, so that's 16 years ago. And yet, still, kids are still... And also, what's really lovely about it was that kids who were kids then are now young adults. And so there's a whole generation of people who approach me in a way that is really lovely, because I've been a part of their childhood, this sort of magical part of their childhood. So when they meet me as young adults, it's really lovely. I really like it. I'm so glad I did this film.
Do you do the Floop song for them at all?
No. I sometimes do the F with my hand. The F that you make. I'm doing it right now, but of course you can't see it on the video.
We mentioned it earlier on. Nightcrawler in X-Men 2 was, I think, one of my absolute favourite characters in the X-Men universe. You were absolutely stunning in that film, and I was just a little bit gutted that Nightcrawler never really came back. Well, until this last Apocalypse one, they put sort of younger people in it, but he was pretty good in that. But the film wasn't.
I didn't see that one. There's that nice Australian boy. He seems lovely.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. I mean, he's no Alan Cumming, but he's good. Were you disappointed that they didn't sort of bring Nightcrawler back? Because I think that made a massive impact on that universe.
Well, only in that they had an option on me for the next film. And, these things, you think they're really well planned and really well organized. They're just flung together at the last minute. Especially, I mean, the script of that, of X2, I think was a really great script. And I think a lot of these sequels and, superhero films fail because they don't have, the more sequels that go on, they don't really, they're not as constructed as well as they could be. But with the X3, they were changing the story till the very last minute. And I was literally about packing my bags to go and shoot, to shoot it, when they said, we've dropped the Nightcrawler story from the script. So it was kind of annoying, because I had set time aside in my life to do it. And then they kind of had just different plans, budget and change, and all those things. It's a variable feast. But that was a bit annoying. But instead of, it was so funny, like a couple of days after that, I got asked to be in the L Word. So I went off to Vancouver and hung out with loads of lesbians. So it was actually, I made some lemonade.
every cloud. I wanted to ask you as well, because Kat, who I do some movie reviews here, has been talking to me this week about a film called, which I think is not out yet, called Hurricane Bianca, which I believe you're involved with.
Yes, it hasn't come out yet, but it's about to come out in America. and it's Bianca Del Rio, you know, the who won RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
I've known Bianca for years, and she's a drag queen in New York City, and Roy, who plays her, I've been friends with him for a long, long time. And so he asked me to be in the film, and I have the little part, but it's really fun. And I'm just so glad, you know, Bianca's a really great character, and I'm just so happy for Roy that he's having all this success.
Obviously, the Good Wife, is that all done and dusted now? Is that finished?
Finished.
Oh, that is a shame.
Dead. Yeah, so it's finished in April,
For an American TV show, it lasted pretty well, though, because, invariably they get cancelled halfway through a first season.
I know, 7 years, 7 seasons we did. So it was, you know, a huge success in that respect.
Yeah.
So, it was lovely. And I'm really glad that it ended the way it did. It ended because the writers wanted to end it rather than the network, you know, ditching it. So they got to kind of do the story arc that they wanted. And I think it was time, you know, I think sometimes in America, when there is a successful show, they just milk it and milk it and milk it, and it kind of gets watered down. And, so I was actually really glad that they ended it when they did. And now, you know, this is in Los Angeles the last couple of days. I'm talking about looking at maybe doing another TV show. So maybe it won't be too long before I'll be back on your weekly screens.
Well, that would be good news. I mean, there's a lot of really big actors like yourself all going to TV. They're just, you know, with Netflix and Amazon, the TV seems to... Well, it's almost like the new cinema.
Well, you know, I think it's a really exciting time. I think I was talking to someone the other day about this. Like, you know, when I first came to America and started making films, it was a really different sort of landscape. And basically, the whole independent film world kind of moved to television. And I think that's... And at the same time, with all the different... ways to watch television through Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and all the streaming things. There's so much going on, and there's all these people have come to this world, and it's a sort of golden age, you know. It's really great because it used to be, I mean, there's still terrible TV shows, of course, but it's actually a really exciting time. There's a lot, compared to, like, the film world. I think, you know, right now in Hollywood, it's mostly blockbusters that are the things that have been made for cinema, and smaller films tend to be ending up on the small screen, which I think is fine.
Alan, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Yorkshire.
My pleasure. Lovely to talk to you.